Grace. Grace is silence. Grace is awakening, a prolonged aha, to experience what is real without illusions, holding a day-old chicken, a little chick, so fuzzy and warm. Grace is authenticity. If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. That's from Jesus according to the Gospel of Thomas. Grace is effortless, like falling in love, zooming down a water slide, floating down a stream, surrendering effortlessly to the forces of life. Grace is flexibility. Life puts us into endless, awkward positions. Fully embraced, these become emblematic postures of dignity and grace. Grace is flow, a process. It's not something that you can hold, but rather something you move with. It's the sweet spot, the zone, that place where everything falls together and moves and lifts and does its thing without effort. Everyone knows that feeling. Grace flows from the source, the patterns of life, the laws of the universe, the way, the truth is the nature of all being. When you follow the way of life, don't fight. Accept the Tao, the way, your way, the Unitarian Universalist way, finding your way together and alone. Grace is spiritual freedom, liberating us from false ideas, the tyranny of ignorance, the oppression of emotional turmoil. Grace is freedom to question everything and the freedom to know that not all questions have answers. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery, sings Bob Marley. Grace delights in uncertainty. And the wisdom of uncertainty lies the freedom from our past, from the known, from the prison of past conditioning. Uncertainty is the fertile ground of creativity and freedom. At its heart, grace is gratitude. The gratitude that seeps into every cell of our being and connects us all. Grace is harmony with the whole, the symphony of the cosmos, a celebration of the interdependence of all this life that brings us here today. And the grace of laughter. Laughter is carbonated holiness, says Annie Lamott. Carbonated holiness, all right. Grace is quest. Quest is an awakening to truth. Not the proclamation of truth. It's knowing that an understanding of ultimate reality will always be out of reach, but searching to understand it anyway, a willingness to be on the journey. Thank you for being on this journey with me. Thank you. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan on this glorious May day when the hills are greening and the creeks are flowing and there's mud puddles everywhere you can jump and splash into and remember what it's like to be a kid if you're not a kid. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
even the chalice needs to be relit sometimes. Let us stand as you are able and sing our opening hymn 318, We Would Be One. I draw your attention to the announcements in our order of service. We have a couple in addition to what you find here, especially in our order of service. Michael Oldfather will be sharing a personal reflection, and Anna Franklin will be sharing a Vedic chant. You'll find out where. And now Kathleen.
Morning, I'm Kathleen Tanona, the board chair. I just wanted to share with everybody that we took the board met this past Tuesday. We took the recommendation of our search committee, and we have offered a position to Reverend John Lou Johnstone, and she has accepted. So she is coming to us from Oklahoma City, where she is currently serving as a three-quarter time associate minister to a very large church. She has over 20 years experience. And I think that she is above and beyond what we've asked for our goals for developmental ministry, and we are going to get a lot more than what we expected. So I'm excited. She will be coming in mid-August, and we are going to be sharing information on the website, sermons of hers, part of just information about her that will be posted shortly. I'll send a note to the listserv and to the Facebook sharing page. Once that's up, please feel free to talk with me, any of the board members, or members of the search committee with any questions that you may have. So it's exciting. Thanks, everybody.
Before we begin our recognition of religious education teachers, a great moment in our cycle of Sundays, I would like to acknowledge the grace and the good service of the following board members who have been working with me during my time here as the minister of this fellowship. Michael Oldfather, Eric Banner, Elka Lorenz, Bryce Hobrock, Larry Weaver, Ann Cowan, Scott Tanona, Tom Phillips, and our wondrous Kathleen Tanona. Thank you all. All right, Sandy. Thank you.
Good morning. We are going to recognize some other folks. In RE, we believe, and here at UU, we believe that faith is a journey that we all take together. Religious education takes a lifetime. It happens both within and beyond these walls. We support one another as individuals, families, and communities in an ongoing search for truth and meaning. We strive to guide one another, all ages among us, in religious questioning, personal change, and discovering ways to better live in faith. We affirm the inherent worth and dignity of all beings, and we believe each of us is responsible and capable to help change the world for the better. Our children are continually learning and growing together. They encourage and support one another. Teachers are learners, and learners are teachers. It is with extreme gratitude that we will publicly recognize this year's RE teachers for their compassion and dedication to the program. So Jess might need to be brought in. So we'll start with Kathleen Oldfather. If you guys want to come up and stand and be recognized, that'd be great. She took some convincing, but she thoroughly enjoys her new role leading the kindergarten through second grade students. Are there any kindergarten through second graders here today? You guys want to stand up too? Yeah. Okay, Matt Sayer, come on down, who probably enjoys the third through sixth grader students more than he really lets on. Molly McGoy, who leads the seventh through tenth graders with extreme patience with both me and them. And, of course, Jessica, who's not here today, Martin Long, who takes on the nursery with great patience as well. So we will publicly recognize these folks for just a moment. If you're in these classes, kids, why don't you come and say thank you to Kathleen, Molly, and Matt. Stand up, say thank you. We also had the good fortune to run an OWL program for the fourth through sixth graders this last semester, and we want to thank Carolyn Ferguson, who I don't think is here, and but Mark could stand up for, and Christopher Renner, who I don't think is here today either. So thank you to them. But no program is complete without a good substitute. Amy Fowler and Matt and Jen Campbell were our go-tos for. So thanks to them as well. And now we would like you to find the recognition litany inside your programs. When there was a need, you came forward.
And so we thank you.
Week after week, after week, after week, you helped.
And so we thank you.
Quietly, thoughtfully, and unbidden, you did what needed doing.
And so we thank you.
Sometimes with the help of many hands, other times alone, you worked.
And so we thank you.
You gave your time, talent, and even your treasure for the life of the congregation.
And so we thank you.
Your families and loved ones supported you in your efforts, worried for you when things piled up, and perhaps grumbled at you for the extent of your commitment.
And so we thank your families and loved ones.
For all things great and small you have given this congregation, we take time today to recognize you, to thank you, and to honor you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like to share a personal joy or sorrow that is brief, please do so now.
Hi, I'm Jane Pelletier. I'd like to introduce my friend Linda Broderson, who is here from Clay Center. We've known each other since 1976. I think 1976 we've known each other, so it's a pleasure to have her here with me.
Hi, Alex Stenson. So we have a joy and concern, kind of a mixed feeling item. So we've been kind of finalizing plans to move to Vermont at the end of July, and because Sarah's job has an office up there, and so we're very sad to leave this fellowship. We found a really good home here, but at the same time, it's kind of a new step on our journey. So we just wanted to share that.
Ann Cowan, I want to announce that I am driving again now, and so that's very good. But I want to especially thank all the people who have been driving me for almost 2 months now, especially Betty Banner and Barbara Hacker, who did multiple journeys with me, and I'm still trying to convince myself that I'm not the cause of Barbara's car breaking down on the way to my doctor's last week. Not sure if that's true, but also want to thank other people, Shirley and Linda and Katie and Tom, Dixie, Jennifer, all for doing things while I was laid up. And I would love to return and drive people other places now for the next week. And then the bad news is that after that, I need more surgery. Same leg, different problem. But I'll be out there begging for rides again in another couple of weeks.
Hello, my name is Kelly. Today is my birthday, and so I just wanted to say I managed to survive 38 years, and here's to 38 more.
All right. Happy birthday.
I'd like to invite everyone to come up, and if you haven't yet, see the one-third mile of sea of irises on Miller Parkway. Not only is it beautiful, stunningly visually, but it's also inspirational because it was one fellow who lived up there who is living his passion. He's out there all the time for the last 3 years, maybe planting irises. And it's just, it's wonderful to see. It's a testament to how one person can beautify their neighborhood, their community, the earth. It's really stunning.
Hi, I'm Kathy Hedge, and I've just returned from California, where I was with my mom as she celebrated her 90th birthday. It's especially wonderful because it was a grand party. It was a beautiful day, and over 75 people came besides family. So it was huge, and it was especially sweet since last year at this time we were saying goodbye. And so it was a terrific time, and she's very, very sharp and very happy.
I'm Sylvia Beeman. I wanted to thank everyone who showed up on such a busy day yesterday for work day, and these are the people who showed up: Mark Mayfield, Mark Clark, Kalina Stanton, Colin McMillan, Dave Lambert, Chris Bailey, Scott and Kathleen Tanona, Terry Franz, Sarah Lott, Alex Stinson, Ann Marchin, Gene Sievers, Shirley Hobrock, and my sweetie, Dick Beeman, and also Kathleen and Michael Oldfather came on their own time, and the Mystery Pansy Planter. And I also want to say that the Unitarian group, this group, has survived a long time in inhospitable places sometimes. We're so lucky to have this place. And I'm never out there working, and I don't remember the people who came before me. Martha Slack, Sam Lacey, who are they're both still alive and kicking, I think, of all the things they planted. And Barbara Hacker helped so much in the past, and Ann Cowan and Betty Banner, and probably lots of you others. And if I forgot anyone, I'm really sorry. So thank you. It takes a lot of work to keep this structure and the grounds going. And I'm so grateful for all of you, and Pat Embers, too. Thank you.
Good morning. Slavomir and I are overjoyed to share our Sunday morning with Dr. Rosemary Talab. Rosemary is one of the most extraordinary people you'll ever meet, and she's been an endless source of blessings in our lives ever since she came into our lives, so I'm happy that she's here.
I would like to acknowledge that a dear friend who goes back to 1973, Penny Weiner, is here, who's seen me move through many incarnations and is always saying, what? Anyway, that's Penny there. And my sister's here again today, so I'm very grateful. So for all those joys, I think they were all joys mostly, right? A little bit of sorrow. There's always a little bit of sorrow. Let us be mindful of those that have spoken. Let us remember that each of us in our hearts have things that we long for and need. And just be mindful. Just be kind.
Thank you.
Nathan and his family have had an unfortunate attack of the cats. It's real. So we're lucky to have Rose and Scott lead us in our story for all ages today.
Could kids come on up? We'll talk. This is a perfect example of something that Reverend Michael is going to be talking about today. Because it's about, today's sermon is partly about things just coming together kind of magically and letting that happen and what you need to do to sort of let things like that happen. And so, you know, there's always lots of planning that has to happen to make things like church happen and RE school and things like that, right? But then things don't always work out as planned either. And so that's what we're doing right now, because this wasn't planned until about 5 minutes before church. So here we go. So one of the things that we were going to talk about, Rose is going to read you a poem, right? But two poems, in fact, right? And she read one of these for the talent show at her school, Teddy Roosevelt, just this past week, and she had a lot of fun. But she was also nervous about it, right? Were you a little nervous? Mm-hmm. So, but she was nervous, but then also, when it happened, what other feelings did you have once it was done?
Excitement.
And
I had fun.
Excitement and fun, too, even with the nervousness. She had to do a bunch of planning to practice it, but then she also, you know, could you practice enough? Yeah, you practiced enough. But at some point, you have to just stop practicing, right? So I wanted to ask you all, sort of in terms of feelings you have and planning, are there any other times that things you had to plan for something a lot and it worked well, or something that you didn't plan at all and it just happened and it was great?
So far, we're still planning since we're doing a play tomorrow in my class at Bluemont Elementary, and I'm pretty excited and really nervous. We do it 6 times.
Yeah, that's a lot of planning and nervousness. Who else? And talk to me about planning for things.
My school did a choir tour, and I'm guessing that involved a lot of planning, and it definitely involved a lot of practice.
A lot of planning and a lot of practice. Who else?
I also had to practice a lot for the talent show.
Also, lots of practice. What else? Who else? And the talent show, everybody, the talent show at TR that we saw was great, and I'm sure all these other things are going to be great. Now, you know what? One of the things you get to be, that one of the things that's great about being a kid is that a lot of times you don't have to plan. You just things happen. You just do things. Do you have any stories like that where you just, like, something just happened and all of a sudden you just had fun and you didn't even plan it? Like every day, probably. What are you thinking?
Too many to remember.
Too many to remember. How about like yesterday? What kinds of things happened yesterday? Did you plan everything that happened yesterday, or did some things just happen?
Some things just happened.
Some things just happened. That's a pretty cool feeling when that happens too, right? You just let go. Well, once you get to be more adultish, it's kind of a bummer because you can do that less. Less often do you get to just let things happen. You plan more and more. But sometimes, eventually, you just go with it. And that's what Rose is going to do now. She's going to read two poems. She planned one of them because she practiced, but the other one, she didn't at all until just this morning. We said, oh, let's read that one too. So that one is just a happening. All right, so let's go for it.
What is Red? By Mary O'Neill. Red is the sunset, blazing and bright. Red is feeling brave with all your might. Red is a sunburn spot on your nose. Sometimes red is a red, red rose. Red squeals out when you cut your hand. Red is a brick and the sound of a band. Red is a hotness you get inside when you're embarrassed and want to hide. Firecracker. Fire engine, fire, flicker red, and when you're angry, red runs through your head. Red is an Indian, a Valentine heart, the trimming on a circus cart. Red is lipstick, red is a shout, red is a signal that says, watch out! Red is a great big rubber ball, red is the giantest color of all. Red is a show-off, no doubt about it. But can you imagine living without it?
And then this one is not planned or practiced.
Accidentally. Once, I didn't mean to, but that was that. I yawned in the sunshine and swallowed a gnat. I'd rather eat mushrooms and bullfrog's legs. I'd rather have pepper all over my eggs than open my mouth on a sleepy day and close on a gnat going down that way. It tasted sort of salty. It didn't hurt a bit. I accidentally ate a gnat, and that was it.
And now we'll see you off to class.
Go with you. Go enjoy our hops. Go to learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do. Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go enjoy our hearts, go to learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is for us a place of love, community, memory, and hope. For we are now keepers of the dream and the bright vision which calls us forward. Let us share generously.
Michael Nelson asked me to say a few words about my involvement with the undocumented children of immigrants who were brought here by their parents. And a few months ago, I took two of them, high school senior and junior, along with their mother to Lincoln to work with an attorney who had volunteered her time to help with this very arduous process that required lots and lots of forms to complete and so on. And she worked with them through the day. I had the pleasure of getting to know these kids as we drove up there and their dreams and as we drove back. When their session with the attorney was over, I'll get back to that in a minute, but the question that Michael asked me was, why did I have some kind of special attachment for these undocumented immigrants? Well, the Altvaters came from Prussia in 1769 with family and friends whom they later married, so many of my ancestors were there. Not a document in the whole group who came here. They just stepped off the boat, went to a place where they had heard about in southern Pennsylvania where they could buy some land and open a mill, grist mill. In about 1830, the Swedish side of my family came here. Magnus Magnusson, not a document to his name. Later, all before the Civil War, other ancestors of mine came here from England and Ireland without documents. My mother and her nine siblings were born in the last decade of the 18th century, the 19th century, and the first decade of the 20th century in very rural Nebraska, all born in a sod house. And when they left home to go out into the world, they had no documents. There was a photograph in the family Bible of the births of my mother and her nine siblings that translated into birth certificates and enabled them finally, nearly 100 years ago, to become documented citizens. I am a descendant of a whole line of undocumented workers and immigrants. One final note about after we've had lunch, after the children and their mother had their session with the attorney, the mother said, and I couldn't quite get it up, my Spanish is not strong, but the children said, my mother would like to see something nice. Well, I thought we were in a part of the town that wasn't all that bad, but it was kind of a mix of apartments and older commercial things. So I thought, well, we weren't too far from the Rose Garden and the zoo, and so we went there. And it was early, but lots of the stuff was in bloom, and the mother just glowed through the whole time at seeing this pretty place in her adopted country. It was worth the time that I spent helping them work through this process.
Svaha tatsavitur varenyam bhargo devasya dhimahi dhiyo yo na prachodayat om apo jyotirasso amratam brahma Bhurbhuvasuvarom. Om Shatamanam Bhavatu Shatayuhu Shatayu Purusha Purusha Shatendriyaha Shatendriya Iti Shata Indriyaha Ayushyeva Eva Prati Prati Tishtati Tishtati Ti Tishtati.
Necessary grace. When a 7-year-old brother shares that extra slice of pizza with his 4-year-old sister, a friend brings you to physical therapy or doctor's appointments because you can't drive. Loss of memory. That moment when someone dear to you cannot write a check and they feel lost, and everyone present feels that loss but also learns from that person that their daughter-in-law will be writing the checks, finding a way. Last week, when Slavomir played Edvard Grieg as rain beat against the roof, the music seemed to respond and become a part of the natural order, lifting up an exquisite synchronicity. About 4 or 5 years ago, I was working with Thea Neatfield in the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Hutchinson. It was ready to disband or come together with more power. And we were done with the service, and we were ready to begin the time when we would be thinking about what would come next. And Jennifer Bryan showed up, and she brought out her violin, and she played something that stopped everybody in their tracks. No going forward, no going backward, no going sideways. You were right there in the center of each and every single note. It was a moment of unexpected grace. I'd like to share this poem called Probability by Leah Purpura. Probability. Most coincidences are not miraculous, but way more common than we think. It's the shiver of notice being central in its sequence of events that makes so much seem wild and rare. Because what if it wasn't? Astonishment is nothing without your consent. You have to be present. You have to be aware. You have to receive that moment of shivering, wild rareness. I've shared this with you before, but it's such an indelible memory, I'll share it again. Chuck and I were celebrating a friend's 40th birthday party, whom we just celebrated her 60th birthday party a couple of weeks ago. And we were in New Orleans with a group of friends having a rowdy, rowdy time and just feeling happy and just like everything was fun. And Chuck and I were walking back from that district where everyone has jello shots and wears these kinds of things. And I said, let's walk here. And Chuck goes, oh, I don't think so. I said, no, come on. We can do this. We can walk through. It looks kind of cool. It's interesting. So we walked in what was kind of a gated neighborhood, and slowly but surely we saw men standing on their stoops, sitting on the steps, staring at us ominously. We got the sense that we didn't belong there. But I kept saying, no, we can do this. Let's just keep on walking. Let's just pretend like we belong here. And then a little African-American girl, she couldn't have been much more than 3 or 4 on her tricycle, stopped her tricycle and looked at me and said, Mister, you got to get out of here. They kill you. A 3-year-old guiding 2 41- and 42-year-old men to safety. We could have been killed. It was that ominous. Her advice, such a surprise and necessary. It's the shiver of notice being central in its sequence of events that makes so much wild and rare. Chuck asked me yesterday why we weren't singing Amazing Grace today. And I said, well, I'll get to that. We won't sing it, but I'm going to get to it. A couple years ago in the UUA world, they had an article about grace. And in it, they talked about the hymn, Amazing Grace. Perhaps the hymn along with that old rugged cross is the most sung hymn at funerals and memorial services at Christian burials. It's an anthem people used to celebrate being saved from sin, a sin-filled life and its resting place, hell. But that's not what Amazing Grace is really about. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. John Newton, the 18th century Englishman who wrote the famous hymn, had been a slave trader before he became a prominent abolitionist. He said his change of heart, which turned his life around, was grace's doing. It rescued him. It saved a wretch like me. That thing that moves the heart from violence to reconciliation to a path filled with peace, from hatred to love, necessary, so necessary in our everyday lives, the lives of our community, the state, the nation, the world. Astonishment. A willingness to see where you have erred, and a willingness to amend, to change, to open up, to let change come in and do its good work, to not hold back because you are afraid of losing all the money that the slave trade brought to lots of prominent Unitarians, to give that up, to give that security of economic wealth. We have places in all our lives where we can give up something and let something new come in. The liberal theologian Henry Nelson Wyman, whose theology came to depend little on God, kept room for grace. In The Source of Human Good, Wyman, who became a Unitarian in 1949, worried that we humans plunge into despair. We plunge into despair when we fail to live up to our ideals. We fail when we fail to live up to our ideals. What does that mean? And we do invariably fail. According to Wyman, however, a creative power of process can transform us into being capable of doing good. This process, which he called creative interchange, is at work wherever individuals or institutions communicate in ways that foster new meanings. As we integrate these new meanings into our lives, our sense of the world's richness and possibility expands, and our sense of community strengthens. That, for Wyman, is grace. We all know what grace feels like in our body when we can just move without, oh God, no, not that again. Oh yeah, that movement, that free movement, or that movement of the heart or the mind when we figure something out, a mathematical equation, or where to put that darn bougainvillea, or whatever it is that we have to solve, and suddenly we have a place for it. Grace is a process of awakening, being mindful of all the conditions a person, a community, a family need for opening up, allowing room for what comes unexpectedly, like Scott was helping the children to think about and to look at, and for that Mexican-American mother to have a few hours where she could see something beautiful. These are transformative moments. Unitarian Universalist congregations are a perfect environment to practice change. We all know that. In the 11 years or 10 and a half years and days that I've been here, we have gone through many changes, significant changes. And then we've all experienced those meetings which move from the mundane that began as blah, 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 skimming the surface of things, and it suddenly shifts into a deep and profound place where everyone is listening, where you can feel the presence of the other person. You can almost hear their heartbeat because something has happened, something real, something that helps us grow. About 7 years ago, I thought, well, I had done what I could here at this fellowship. It's not that I didn't love the people. I did and I do. But I felt, you know, I think they're ready for something else. And maybe I am ready for something else. And in my way, when I'm ready to make a big change, I go see my psychiatrist. I talk to all my friends. I talk to the district executive. I talk to my colleagues. And I think about it. And poor Chuck has to listen again and again and again and again. This is why I want to do it. These are the reasons. And I really got myself grounded and anchored. All my corners were really well secured. And I was driving to meet Scott Tonona. It was a winter day. And as I was driving down 177, approaching I-70, where the weather often changes, it really does. On one side, it can be raining. On the other side, no rain. Or it could be ice, no ice, whatever. It's just an amazing dividing line. Once I reached that place, it felt like a huge cloud came over me, and I felt the pressure and all this agony, and I just started to weep. And then I said, no, 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 you've got to pull yourself together. You're going to go talk to the chair of the fellowship, and you have important things to say to him. So we sat down, started drinking our coffee, and I said, Scott, I've decided that at the end of the year I would like to resign. And he looked at me and he said, man, that makes me sad. Which I was surprised that philosopher scientist using that language, but man, that makes me sad. And then, after he paused and took in a few breaths, he said, would you be willing to reconsider? And everything in my body leapt open, and as if it, like the light was switched on, and my body was just saying, yes, 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 yes. But of course, I had done all this work, so I said, I'll have to think about it. But this question and the statement before were moments of grace. Unanticipated, absolutely necessary. And once I moved through those phrases and what my body was saying, I realized I was not done yet. I had not done the best work I could do. So I called him up a day or two later, given a nice, convenient time, to let him think that I really thought this through, though I knew that, no, yes, I'm staying, I'll stay, I'll stay, I'll stay. And from that point on, everything started to shift into a pattern where there is more flow, where there things are so hard to get done. We had the consultant come in. We had a visioning process with which came out of which came an incredible vision, probably too long for people who are real wordsmiths, but it says what it needs to say, and it says it for us. And in this last year, when we met at the barn in our property and we had our visioning time together, what we wanted to see happen in this new year, and I heard Jane Pelletier share why she was on the board, why she was willing to come out here and do this kind of work. She says, because I believe in my legacy. Other profound things were shared and said that day, but the most important thing that I think that came out of what Kathleen said last week, I think that at that board retreat, something shifted, and it did. We were aligned with one another. We had a sense of mission based on our vision, and we moved forward with a sense that this can happen. And my goal ever since I started here was to have this be a fellowship that had a full-time minister. Not that the full-time minister can do everything. Obviously, we need people like Michael Oldfather, Anna, Elka, Scott, Kathleen, everybody here, Betty, who's just stepped up to be the treasurer again. My God, this is just great stuff. This is a willingness. This is grace in action. This is how it happens. What a glorious thing to feel this fellowship lift up and begin to realize its potential of being a beacon which will reach out to the borders of Nebraska and go down to Wichita. This is important. We need the progressive voice in this state. I need the progressive voice in this state. People ask me, am I leaving? No, I'm not leaving, but I can't see anybody for 2 years, so get that straight. But I will be here with you as you continue to do this incredible work of being a bold model of love, a builder of bridges across faiths, across all kinds of divisions that are a part of our culture, and an incubator for people who question and want honest support and love from their fellow members. So I feel that this has been a grace-filled year. And I feel absolutely blessed by each and everyone here, no matter if it's your first time, because we're all in this together, as we know, blah, 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 but not blah, blah, blah. When you get stuck in self-destructive habits, unjust systems are simply the daily grind. May grace set you free, whatever your theology. So we have a few minutes. I really worked hard to leave a few minutes. So what kind of grace in your life sets you free? What are those moments when you've been stuck and suddenly you're unstuck, or maybe it's a slow process, but something seems to have intervened beyond your ability to plan it. All right, I'll go get some coffee in the meantime.
Hi, I'm Marissa Larson. I work at the KSU Foundation, and many months ago, Michael and the Jim Crow book group asked that I put out feelers. They had raised some money for a student that they wanted to support, a student at K-State. So I asked the development officers to go out, and just this week we discovered Dr. Myra Gordon, Associate Provost of Diversity at K-State, identified a young man who... from what I understand, basically she just said, I had no idea what I was going to do to help this young man, and then we got the email about your congregation's gift, and it came at just the right time. So we were able to provide a moment of grace for this student.
And my understanding is that he would not be able to graduate if he didn't have this scholarship. So, beautiful. Other moments...
Pat Emerson, this is just a little tiny thing compared to that, but yesterday we weren't able to be here at work day because we had two graduation parties at our house, family before lunch and later friends. Anyway, one of the family members is an OT like I am, a young OT. She's just starting. She's wonderful at it too. And she and her nurse husband had a baby recently. And they came over with us, and there was a person in the family that was graduating, and that's what I, you know, got a card and some money for and did everything for. Well, then I realized that they were coming. I didn't have any gift at all for her baby that just arrived, and her card or anything, but she and I really, really, really love each other. We would just really have a good time. Anyway, what happened was we sat down on the porch swing together, and this baby was there, and I thought, what do I have? And I remembered that I had these little tiny pair of moccasins, baby moccasins, that I had gotten last year when I was up in South Dakota. And so this is such a little thing, but I had been trying to find the right child for these moccasins for about a year because the person that I had gotten for the baby was too big and they didn't fit. Anyway, and I had just found the moccasins that had been disappeared for a year, 2 days before that. And then I sat there on the swing looking at this baby and I thought, wait a minute, those moccasins are just sitting there waiting for this baby. So I went and got the moccasins and they fit beautifully on this baby. And the mother was, I don't know, it was just one of those moments. I'll probably never forget that. This baby put these moccasins on. They looked just charming. And the mother, and I don't know, I just felt great because it had happened without any planning. The fact that I found the moccasins 2 days, I don't know, I was just totally moved by the whole thing. So little tiny things. What's the baby's? Oh. The baby's name is Grace. I didn't even remember that.
That was great. Anna Franklin. Well, the thing that crossed my mind when we were thinking about Grace and when Scott and Rose and all the kids were up there was talking about practice and practice and practicing things, rehearsing things, practicing things, and then the difference between that and things just happening. And the thought that entered my mind is that breath just happens. Actually, our whole life just happens. We think that we, you know, but, and also the other thought is that, of course, I practice every day. I practice breathing. I practice chanting. I practice different body postures. So I practice every day, but also that leads into, I mean, the fact that my breath is just always there. And the main thing that I thought of, speaking of grace and things just happening, was that I go to a practice every week that I can, which is a tango practice. And what we do is we practice. We don't, do anything that's pre-planned, though. We just practice paying attention to our partner and letting whatever happens happen. So we practice letting what is going to happen happen. So it's a kind of like, there's no difference, really, in my mind when I'm on the floor dancing tango. And one illustration was that I spent 2 hours tangoing with lots of different people. And then when they finish, they play some other kind of music to let everyone know that the tangoing is finished. And they played some kind of other music, which was swing. And somebody just came up to me, and all of a sudden, the next thing I knew is I was swing dancing, which I never, ever learned how to do. You know, so it just happens. But anyway, you got to practice for it to just happen really well.
Well, thank you, everyone. No, that's fine. Thank you, Anna. Let us now, we're going to sing from this book. And we'll be singing Blue Boat Home 1064.
Thank you.
these closing words from Emma Goldman. Someday, men and women will rise. They will reach the mountain peak. They will meet strong and free, ready to receive, partake, and bask in the golden rays of love. What fancy, what imagination, what poetic genius can foresee the potentialities of such a force in the life of men and women? Let us praise the potentialities in this day and every day forward.